Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, trusted for remodeling projects big and small. Ideas at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. By its own account, the Missouri Department of Mental Health is, quote, continually at absolute bed capacity for competency restoration. The words continually and absolute are underscored in that sentence. Put another way, in Missouri, there's not enough space to provide defendants with psychiatric care that they need before they can be assessed as fit to stand trial for charges. And that means a wait can last more than a year, up to 14 months likely in jail, before competency restoration treatment can happen. One defendant among several hundred waiting their turn for treatment is 52-year-old Megan Jolly. According to a new report from the Marshall Project, Jolly has spent nearly 2 years jailed at the St. Charles County Justice Center. And her story and experience is simultaneously distinct and representative. Jesse Bogan is the journalist behind that report titled Lost in Missouri's Jail Cells. He joins us now to talk about it. Jesse, welcome back to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you.
So, Jesse, how did this issue first come to your attention?
Well, I'm a student of the criminal justice system in Missouri, and I'm still learning about that broad topic. But here at the Marshall Project, we look for systemic issues in the criminal justice system. And so starting here last December, I really started looking into the jail system, including the St. Louis's jail.
Mm-hmm.
In that jail and many other jails, many of the people there have mental illness. And many of the people there have been in jail a long time. And so that's how this started.
What part of all of that really struck you most?
The lack of answers, the lack of people coming to court, being seen in court, the lack of solutions to a problem that is very clear once you get in there and recognize it. It's right there in front of us. But even people who work in this arena at the courthouse day in and day out, you know, people fall through the cracks. And so if you want to find out who's caught up in this system, one easy way to do that is to look at jail rosters, go and look when they were booked into the jail, and look at the dates, and and you'll immediately ask, wow, I can't believe Robert Johnson. This is a real person.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's who it started with, was Robert Johnson. He was booked into the St. Louis City Justice Center in March of 2018. He's still there. He's one paragraph in this story that you so excellently summarized.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that clarity of the summation that you did of this story and the issue.
So Robert Johnson is someone I want to return to mm-hmm. later. But competency restoration, this is something that Robert Johnson is one of the people who has not gone through that treatment yet. What is it exactly, Jesse, and what does it involve?
Okay, so the basic premise, again, is to take into consideration is there are a lot of people in jail with mental illness. Now, perhaps the worst of the worst are the people who are in jail with mental illness who do not understand what's going on. They are mentally unfit to proceed with their cases. These are defendants. These are people who have been accused of crimes, and they've been arrested, and they're held in jail right until their trial. Well, our rules in the country and in this state is it's a violation of due process to prosecute somebody who's incompetent. You know, there's no law that says somebody can't walk down the street and beg for money and be an incompetent, right? Maybe you've been there. Maybe somebody's listening right now and they're at a street corner in St. Louis and somebody's begging for money. And maybe sometimes they're really quiet. Sometimes people make a big fuss. Some of those folks, perhaps if they did an evaluation, would find out that they are incompetent. And so once they're in the criminal justice system, they get flagged oftentimes by their public defender, by the prosecutor, by the judge, something's just not right here. This person doesn't understand what they're accused of. They're unable of helping in their own defense. And so when that happens, there's a request made in court to have the defendant evaluated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that starts a process that takes a long time to get to the point where you can even get in the line for treatment.
And how long does treatment typically take?
Okay. And before we get to the actual treatment, mm-hmm. so what's just this example of somebody who's been arrested and they're in jail and their public defender says, you know what, let's have this person evaluated. That's all a formal process that takes a long time because they're going to make that formal request and they're going to request to the Missouri Department of Mental Health, please evaluate this person. And that can take months before the person's even evaluated, okay? Half of the evaluations that they do, they come back saying, yes, this person's incompetent. They need competency restoration treatment, okay? Right now, once the judge orders competency restoration treatment, it takes 14 months on average to get to a treatment bed that you were asking about.
Mm-hmm. And in your story, you write, and you've just mentioned something about this too, Jesse. You write, when someone is unable to assist in their own defense, a judge can order an evaluation to determine their mental capacity to proceed to trial. And mm-hmm. again, these are people who have been accused of breaking the law in some fashion. Mm-hmm. They've not yet been charged with mm-hmm. anything. So to make it abundantly clear, what is the relationship between evaluation of mental capacity and jail?
Mm-hmm. Well, they've been charged with a crime, so maybe that's criminal. And you know, there right now we should say there's 500 people in the state of Missouri who have been deemed incompetent to stand trial, and they're waiting to be restored typically at a state mental health hospital. And so they face a crime. They're in the criminal justice system. And society hasn't been able to help these folks. And so this is kind of the last resort where they get into trouble. And due to our law system, they have to be dealt with. And so if they're waiting for an evaluation, typically they're waiting in jail. If they've been evaluated and that person is deemed, you know, that's some of them aren't incompetent. Some of them are in a different category. But maybe somebody who's been extremely addicted to methamphetamines, you know, that's a real scientific evaluation is this person incompetent? But even if they do find them incompetent, they're going to be waiting for treatment, typically in jails. And so that evaluator recognizes that person is mentally ill. But in Missouri right now, there's nowhere better to put them other than jail, which many say is about the worst place to put somebody who's mentally ill.
Mm-hmm. And again, they have been charged. They've not gone to trial.
That's right.
So who is it that gets caught up in this system?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is a good point to talk about Robert Johnson briefly.
Mm-hmm. It can be a range of people. And one compelling piece is that this mental illness, I'm sure you've heard it on your show before, affects all sectors of society. And so you know, and it involves all kinds of different crimes. I mean, oftentimes, you know, people with mental illness end up being arrested for like criminal trespassing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're homeless, they end up somewhere and they get arrested. There are far more serious crimes as well, including murder, which Mr. Robert Johnson is accused of murder. And so that's the crime that he faces. There's another person mentioned in the story. You know, he was apparently exposing himself at a popular church here in St. Louis in the St. Louis Hills neighborhood. And he's been in jail about 400 days, okay? He's been deemed incompetent to stand trial. But once they do that, that stalls your criminal case. It can't move forward until they're mentally able to understand what's going on. And so that man that I just described, who's been in jail 400 days, If he served the full time of a sentence, if he was convicted, it would have been 180 days. And so the system is supposed to help these folks get into treatment. But the problem is they can't get into treatment because there aren't any beds. They're overwhelmed with this growing population of people who are deemed incompetent to stand trial.
And this is the number of people who are now waiting. It is over 500. What accounts for the increase in how many defendants have been waiting in line? And I believe that 2013 and 2023 are key dates when it comes to this question, right, Jesse?
Yes. You're right. The last time I got a number was October 21st, and there were just about 500 people who are deemed incompetent. So the judge has filed this order and said, this person needs to be restored. That's about 500 people. 2 years ago, it was half that. It was 250. Back in 2013, there were 10 people statewide waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been a dramatic increase. This is not news to mental health experts, the Missouri Department of Mental Health. They've been wrestling with this for a decade, you know, these numbers. You ask why? Why is this happening? I tried to answer that question, and I spent a lot of time on that.
Mm-hmm.
and the answers are varied. I'll tell you what the state said, because I went to Jefferson City. I wanted to talk to the leaders and ask them, what can be done at this point? You know, what's broken in this system? Going to Jefferson City is like, surely they would acknowledge something's broken in this system. And, you know, there used to be more state hospital beds in Missouri for people who haven't been accused of a crime. So you don't have, and this is a poor way of saying it, but you don't have to hurt somebody. You don't have to hit somebody over the head to get your own head fixed.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be more state support there. That's not there. Okay. The state now is not willing to say that that's a problem in the interviews that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
They said there's a safety net of hospitals in the community that work with people with mental illness, and there's statutes to guide that treatment. Getting to your point, or my point about the state and what they, you know, what they told me about this increase was, the only thing that I can tell you, that they can tell me clearly, is that the requests for evaluations have gone through the roof compared to 10 years ago. They are getting more requests to do these evaluations for people who are deemed incompetent. Why? There are a lot of answers for that, or a lot of unanswered questions about that, and a lot of different responses.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of time going down that road, and ultimately decided to hit the brakes and just look at the problem. Like, what is the problem right now? How has the state responded to the problem? And let's look at those programs and see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm. As we're talking, what we are discussing has to do with real people's lives. And we have previously talked on this show about the backlog of Missouri defendants awaiting competency restoration treatment. But Jesse, your story for the Marshall Project, it presents the situation of a very specific someone who has yet to receive that treatment and waited for nearly 2 years, and that's 52-year-old Megan Jolly. How did you come to Megan Jolly's story and her situation?
The short answer to that is, one thing leads to another. I've talked to, I don't know how many people for this story, but I think it's the most I've ever done. I've been a reporter for 25 years, and I've taken on these kind of tough topics over and over again. This one's got to take the cake. I just have page after page after page of interviews and notes and transcriptions. And what I really wanted to show with this story, I don't think I accomplished. I set out to show what this problem is really like, what it looks like. Because I think we've been talking about the numbers for a little long now, the problem and the numbers and how it's been going up, you know, like the stock market. We all know in this business that there's a person behind every statistic. And so one reason why it took me so long to get this story together is that I didn't want to do a story until I had some stories of people who are stuck in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to get to that point.
We're going to take a very quick break here. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation and get into the story of Megan Jolly with Marshall Project staff writer Jesse Bogan. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Jesse Bogan. Jesse is a staff writer with the Marshall Project. His story, Lost in Missouri Jail Cells, was published last week. Before the break, Jesse, we were talking about a specific story that you were pursuing, and that is the story of 52-year-old St. Louis woman Megan Jolly. And we heard from Megan's mother, Sharon, about what it has been like to live through this experience. And our producer, Darius Varner, spoke with Sharon about what happened leading up to Megan's first mental health episode in 2023.
I had spent years of taking her lunch once a week between 1 week, the next week. No, I don't want lunch. And apparently, I am finding out that things were happening, which is as a result of people perusing the police reports, not a record, but police reports, mm-hmm. that she was doing some very bizarre things during that time frame.
And that was Sharon Jolly. She's the mother of Missouri defendant Megan Jolly. Megan, again, has been incarcerated at the St. Charles County Justice Center since 2023. Now, Jesse, your reporting notes that one of the police reports includes officers questioning Megan for walking down a suburban roadway dressed in a white robe and Santa hat near her home. And I believe that was in Lake St. Charles. And that she spent extended time in a psych ward at a community hospital after she had fled an emergency room. How much does what we're talking about now, the description that Sharon Jolly offered about her daughter's mental state, how much does that mirror the mental health state of other Missouri defendants who've been waiting specifically in jail for psychiatric treatment in order to be deemed fit for trial?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's kind of how I approach the story, too, is of these people. Like here, we know the numbers. The state's being transparent, for the most part, about how many people are in this backlog. That's about as far as they'll go, is they'll tell you the numbers. They wouldn't tell me where the people are across the state. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can eventually figure it out, but I wanted to know where people are coming from in the state of Missouri who are stuck in this. And so if I could look by that region, for instance, where there's a lot of people, a lot of requests made, you know, I can do better reporting to find out, well, why? You know, why are there more requests for this type of evaluation of people who are incompetent? Are they incompetent to stand trial? And what I'm told is that it's a statewide issue. And so I wanted to find some examples of how people ended up in this system, go upstream, you know, who is this person? Where did they come from? In this case, Megan Jolly came from a very loving family. You can see how someone like Megan, who, you know, very bright person, she was pursuing a PhD, a doctorate in political science at one point, and became a specialist in cybersecurity and IT, and lived in Lake St. Louis. And like her mother was saying, you know, something happened, and in her late 40s where things really started changing. And so after I was fortunate enough to find Megan Jolly, hear about her case, and talk to her mother, I went and I verified, you know, what's in the public record.
And what is in the public record?
I mean, pretty much everything her mother's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, police reports of, you know, interactions with law enforcement, you know, and I mentioned the case in the story about her walking down the suburban street, you know, dressed in a robe and a Santa hat. Well, there were other things that were going on as well. I mean, you know, literally her home alarm going off and thinking somebody's after her, you know, stuff like that. And what I wanted to know is, you know, what was Megan's interactions with society before she ended up in the criminal justice system? So mm-hmm. she was getting police wellness checks. She ended up in an emergency room. She ended up at St. Vincent's, which is the psychiatric wing of DePaul Hospital out in Bridgeton.
Mm, right, right.
And she was eventually released, and she continued to decline to the point that there was an incident and she was arrested. And ever since then, she's been at the St. Charles County Jail.
Mm-hmm.
What's notable, this distinction right here, when somebody's been deemed incompetent, they stop the criminal case. Well, in Megan's case, they ended up foreclosing on her home and auctioning it across the street from where she's in jail, okay? So she's been in jail so long that her home has been foreclosed and sold. Her mother, you know, I'm grateful that she shared this story. There's so many families that are leaned on in this situation because they aren't getting enough help. A lot of that, you know, not this shouldn't be a surprise, but a lot of that responsibility is being put on families that are stressed to the max,
mm-hmm.
okay, as their children get older, you know, parents older, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so this puts a lot of stress on people working in the mental health system, but also families.
Yeah. Producer Darius Varner, when he spoke with Sharon Jolly this morning, asked about Megan's prospects, specifically around the question of whether competency can in fact be restored.
I don't. I think she will have to be watched at all times. She has she had asthma all her life, and she has a long history of not being a good pill taker.
Mm.
So, and some of us are like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of them. Oh, well, I'll take two today, maybe three tomorrow. I don't take anything. So I know when during the time that you had sickness or anything, that was good enough. I shouldn't do that. But with her, it will be imperative that every dose of everything has to be exactly on time.
Now, Sharon Jolly added that her deep concerns about her daughter Megan's situation, that they extend beyond just Megan's care. She also sees how it affects the hundreds of others who are lost in the system.
I really, really think that it is wrong for all these people that they are asked to lose everything they have because no one cares enough to appoint a public administrator or allow a person of interest to them be their guardian. It's not right. Nobody needs to go through all this and then come out and find out I don't have a thing left in the world that I knew.
Jesse, what stands out to you about what Sharon shared with us?
Oh, everything. And we spoke for hours. And what stands out to me is that I'm grateful that she's in the story, and also so people can get an idea that this does affect people with means. And, you know, a mental illness, oftentimes, you know, people go off their medication and that creates problems, right? Another guy mentions this story is a guy named Timothy Beckman. And, you know, it says he died while he was in jail in Kansas City. Well, Timothy Beckman was from St. Louis. And I think a lot of people, by the time I get there to talk to them, you know, they have lost everything. Not all of them. And that's what I like about Megan is that she had a lot. And she has lost more than the quality of her mental health. in this situation. But a lot of people in the system really already have lost everything as well, and they're homeless. And like Tim Beckman, like Joshua Cupp, who's mentioned in the story, these are people who have burned through all their connections, it appears to me, from doing the reporting. Tim Beckman's case is really challenging and tells an incredibly tough story as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in jail waiting for competency restoration treatment. He had schizophrenia. He was not taking his medication. So back to what Sharon's saying is that, and, you know, I have an example of that I can talk about in a little bit. But yeah, when people go off their medication, that can cause problems.
Mm-hmm. There's so much room to talk more about this topic and the different stories. But as we wrap here, Jesse, the title of your piece, I tried to pause in order to indicate that there are quotation marks around the word lost.
Mm-hmm.
What is the loss that you were thinking about as you were working on this report?
Oh, lost on so many different levels. And, you know, I was lost trying to understand this issue. And my goal is that anybody who can read it for free, you know, at the Marshall Project, we're not going to charge you. You can just click on it. There's no paywall. But what I hope is that you can read this story and you can get up to speed a lot quicker than for me, let me mm-hmm. tell you. And so, you know, I know there's people talking about this issue in Jefferson City. I can tell by the questions that elected officials are asking in some of these committee hearings that they aren't yet up to speed
okay.
on the issue.
Jesse Bogan is a staff writer for the Marshall Project. You can read Jesse Bogan's piece, Lost in Missouri Jails, at our website. That's stlpr.org. Jesse, thank you so much for coming in to talk with us today.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Darius Varner.
Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.